And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday. It is 105:30 right now, and temperatures are in the 70s outdoors. We'll be running on that forecast coming up here in a bit. But if you want to be a part of the conversation today, ask any questions, call right now, 701-293-9000. We'll get you in on the show. You can always send those questions, topics, or comments via email as well to weatherorag@flagfamily.com. We got a live chat box there available on Facebook, YouTube Live, and you can also watch us each and every single day at any time there and on Acres TV. I'm meteorologist Justin Storm with Ag Director Bridget Riedel, Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, and a little Highlander cow,
Cooper.
That's the deal. We're having a swell day. Guys, had a fun event down there in the parking lot. Teachers, you could still come show up at the Flag Family Studios until 2 o'clock. Claim yourself a free meal as a Teacher Appreciation Day by us. So we're still doing that for another hour. And the rain has held off outside of a few sprinkles. It's been pretty nice for being cloudy and a little breezy out there down there in the parking lot as well.
Thankfully, because I don't think anybody wanted to stand around and be rained out, so folks are fairly excited. If it's just a few sprinkles, that's fine.
Yeah, what's a few sprinkles do? It's not like rain ever flooded an underpass or something.
Or
right?
A whole hospital, right? MRI in Bismarck.
Yeah, right. Those streets turned into raging rivers. You see, they actually were raging rivers before. It's just been so dry out there that they're dried up riverbeds now, and people have started driving on them.
All right, so hold on before you get too weird. Bismarck, actually, there's a certain area in Bismarck that I think it's usually about Main Avenue and South, really was always swamp. It was always river bottom. Mm-hmm. And more development started pushing in there. When you think about Bismarck, when you come in on I-94, you go all the way, you go downhill as you go past the Capitol, further down towards the Kirkwood Mall, and then out to the southern residential areas. So that water coming from the north, she's got like a ski jump. And it's coming down, and where that Sanford Hospital is at is on some of those hills on its way down. So not overly surprising that it happens. I've had a lot of older farmers tell me that if you live in Bismarck, don't live south of Maine.
You know, I just thought it was kind of interesting that they put that thing in the basement.
So you and I were talking about this.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you think you'd put it on like a main floor or maybe on the second level if you have one. I don't know what the hospital out there looks like, but it's the Capitol. I'm sure they have a decent sized hospital.
They have two. There's a couple.
Okay.
St. Alexis as well as Sanford Health. And one of the, I always have a connection, right?
So you got connections anywhere in Irwin.
Oh, one of the ladies in my book club is a radiologist for a hospital here in town, and she said they try to put them in a place where you can easily access them because they're big machines, and you normally have to take out a wall to move them in and out.
Sure.
So where this one was structured, I think they said it was under the driveway for the emergency room, so you can just rip the driveway out, open a hole.
Yeah. Which lift it out with a crane.
Sort of helped. I mean, the water did that for them last night. It's just a little easier access. So to speak.
Hope they had insurance.
Indeed.
As a hospital,
you'd hope so.
Wouldn't it be ironic if they didn't?
Man.
You know, the rest of us worry.
Yeah, we don't need to insure this thing. It's not like someone's going to pick it up and steal it. It's underground and it's flooding out.
Well, you know, you think about how many folks do not have health insurance due to the high cost of it, and a hospital not having insurance, it'd be awkward.
Well, that sounds like a very expensive thing to insure.
I suspect.
And from what I've been told, those things break down often.
I think they do. I don't know why.
Spinning magnets? Yeah, maybe. Something to it.
Was the metal plate in your head the reason that it threw the magnets completely off?
It's actually a metal bar instead of a plate.
Fine.
But it serves the same purpose of holding something together.
Does it wreck the part in your hair, Cousin Eddie?
You want to know how I found out that I had that thing in there? We don't want to talk about
that. Mom told you.
Well, we went into the machine and found out.
At a very young age.
Indeed.
Okay.
Anyway, like we were saying, it's been dry here, and it's been flooding in Bismarck.
Where's my rain, Dean?
Actually, Dean, where's my rain?
Parker was in Bismarck. He's the first guy
so
who
Parker's
sent
fine
me
then.
Pictures.
He got all the rain.
He sent me pictures from Bismarck last night. It was pretty great.
You think Parker's still saying, where's my rain?
Oh, he might have given that up.
Except, you know, over here he might be, because I don't think we've really seen much of a few drops of rain the last little bit. But there's more rain in the forecast.
There is.
A lot of rain, Dean? A little bit of rain?
What's a lot to you, Justin?
I would say anything that would push, I don't know, 3 inches over a cup. Let's just say 3 inches.
Bridget, is 3 inches a lot, or is I mean, that could cause some flooding, but is that like it?
We're talking about rain here, and this is not satellite radio. Calm down over there.
Right.
So,
I don't know where she's going, but
hang on. I'm wheeling and dealing on getting
That's
Justin.
Inappropriate.
Right. I'm wheeling and dealing on getting Justin tractor rides. So I can only do so many things at once.
Mom's setting up a tractor ride for you?
Yeah. Maybe even some cotton candy.
So I'm going to be plucking sugar beets out of the ground.
That's called lifting.
Nice.
And I'll be lifting them up.
Yes. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be getting all that big boy experience. And one of these days, I'm going to trade that old simulated farm into a real farm. Probably be swearing a bit more than I do on the computer, but hey, it's a lifestyle.
We do have more rain in the forecast, though. In fact, we're looking at a few scattered showers. Well, there's more steady showers, but it's to the south of the FM area, moving in a northeast direction, but a lot of it's starting to fade away. But areas south of town could expect to see the steadier rain from this first batch. But we will have more developing as we head into this evening and especially overnight as an area of low pressure moves into the area and kind of parks itself over our area tomorrow. So we'll see these rounds of showers and embedded thunderstorms tonight and continuing tomorrow throughout much of the day. And I think before all is said and done, much of us are going to get pretty close to an inch of rain, and some areas will pick up definitely more than that. But a half inch to an inch of rain easily across much of the area. And then, again, those isolated areas of heavier rainfall, especially out to the west. Flood warnings now out around the Bismarck-Mandan area and flood watches from Jamestown west of Bismarck. So if you're heading out on that 94 corridor going Jamestown westward, watch out. Again, some heavy rainfall currently going on out west. So they picked up 2 to 4 yesterday. They've picked up about another 2 this afternoon.
Like 2 to 6.
There was isolated area. Yeah,
that yeah, picked there up. Are a couple isolated.
And then
areas
another 2 inches already this afternoon. Mm-hmm. So some areas picking up to 8 inches of rain just over the last 24 hours.
Yeah, it's nothing.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
We could use some rain here. I'm ready for a couple inches to fall. My lawn's looking great, surprisingly. I was out there the other day, and it was just looking great. Greatest lawn I've ever had in my entire life. Greatest. Neighbors come over. They're like, wow, he's got such a nice lawn. What does he do? I have no idea what I did this year. I fertilized it, and it's just doing great this year compared to last year.
There's no windmills by your lawn by
chance, I don't have any windmills by my... Well, I have my anemometer, and my neighbor has an anemometer, and the other neighbor also has one. So I guess technically you could say that.
If you have a windmill anywhere near your house, congratulations. It's like a graveyard for birds. And they say the noise causes cancer. You tell me that one, okay?
I'll tell you what, I don't have a bird problem, so.
I apparently do. I had one very random sunflower emerge in my garden.
Really? Just one random?
Didn't plant them. I'm pretty sure it had to do with the neighbors who have bird feeders out.
Yeah, the bird just came and deposited a seed.
And now I have a sunflower in my garden.
Right on. Just a lonely little sunflower in a garden.
He is. You wish he was an onion or a petunia in an onion patch, yeah, but he's right. Just a sunflower.
Yep.
Yeah.
Remember, if you ever plant onions in your garden, to plant one sole petunia.
Just because.
In the middle of said onion patch.
He needs company.
He does need some company. Anyway, coming up on the show today, we got Chad Wheeler. He's a farm manager. We'll be talking about wheat combining and sugar beet harvest coming up here in our 120 segment, as well as a couple ag topics that we'll be running down. This one's got me scratching my head a little bit, and I'm not sure which direction it's really going to turn. And this is lab-grown meat for pets. So apparently we can lab-grow our own pets now and keep them in our house and then feed them to our other pets. This is going to be a very interesting, a controversial topic coming up here in a little bit, as well as bird flu concerns leading to vaccines. So that will be another fun conversation as the
you just
gift that
hype
keeps
this.
On giving.
Right, just hype it
bird
up.
Bird flu. And our last topic we'll run down today is going to be Titan Machinery. They got a diesel camp for high school students, so we'll run down what Titan is going on.
Let's back up to your meat.
Yeah, let's talk about the whole lab-grown meat for pets, because this one just sounds, I don't know.
Well, all right. Over in the UK, they who...
Oh, wow. There we go. That started right off with a banger. Over in the UK.
That's right.
All right.
They have made the decision that they are allowing lab-grown meat. So chicken cells are being cultured in a lab to grow chicken meat that is then being fed to pets. It's been approved by their version of FDA, et cetera, to feed your dogs. Well, I have a couple of things that I have questions on here. Namely, your dog doesn't necessarily care about his chicken. Okay. I grew up with farm dogs. I'm a terrible pet parent, as I'm told, because I'm okay with the fact that dogs will roll in a dead skunk and they eat their own poop, basically. Yeah, that's a dog.
I can confirm I've seen dogs do that.
They do that. And I don't think he was worried about a designer menu. And especially the fact that lab-grown meat, because in the UK, they believe that that would be less pollution than real poultry farming.
Well, of course, because then the chickens don't fart.
If a chicken does that, doesn't an egg pop out?
No, that's a shart.
Oh, sorry. So this is the downside, is you have countries who think that they're doing something that follows the green climate agenda, whereas Italy has completely banned all lab-grown meats. Florida, especially for the human consumption here in the United States.
But think about how clean that chicken's going to be coming off the Petri dish.
I wasn't really worried about that myself.
We don't have to worry about like where it got cut up and butchered, because it's right there on your counter.
Can I just...
Right next to your breakfast.
Like rinse it and cook it well? That'll do it, won't it?
And your fruits. So basically what they're doing over there, or attempting to do now, is save the planet by growing chicken in a Petri dish for their dogs to eat.
They might
be onto something here, Bridget. I think we should fully implement it over here in the studios for a month and see how it goes.
Let the dogs vote.
Do you have a dog?
No, I don't have a dog.
No.
Let them decide.
I got thoughts on that, by the way. But, I might defend somebody if I share my thoughts on that.
Well, save your defense. And also feel free to join in with your arguments against whatever Justin might seem to think. And you can
do that. I will argue anyone about anything, anytime. Just call the studio. 701-293-9000.
Let's talk politics then, if you want to argue.
I don't talk politics.
We just said you would argue about anything, anytime.
We can't. Yeah. I have a guest.
This is WDAY Radio, bud.
Right.
What?
So
we can't argue politics on
here?
Not
here.
No. I got a guest.
We have a guest.
We'll have Chad Wheeler when we come back.
Sounds like a plan.
And a welcome back. Thank you for joining us here, Weather and Ag in Focus. And thanks to all the teachers who came out today to visit and just kind of rejuvenate themselves before they head back into school. It's a Wednesday. Maybe some of you have decided you're going to take a little time to relax because it's overcast and cloudy.
You could
do that with North Dakota Sweet Crude. You want to take that to softball tonight?
Sure am. It's bottle pack. Actually, it's keg night tonight.
I like the way you planned.
Yeah.
But you could either take the Sweet Crude or the Sweet Crude Orange. They have the same smooth finish, except the orange has, well, a splash of orange. If you're looking for ideas of what you want to mix, go to crudespirits.com. And thank you to Mark Wagner with ND Estate Services. He was with us earlier this week. He's also one of our Here We Grow sponsors. And Mark did an outstanding job of helping us move along the idea of farm transitions and the process that we should go through for estate planning. It was so good. Justin didn't even have to ask questions.
I didn't. You guys were just going along, and I was like, this is great.
Yeah, just take
I'm getting
notes.
So much quality information right now. And he always seems to, you know, for talking about something is, I'm trying to think.
Emotionally charged?
Death. He makes it engaging and entertaining,
which does.
I think is the best part about it.
You know, one thing I didn't ask him is if you can pass on those Heritage Red Wing boots that most farmers use and love, and they are actually valuable. So I'll have to ask Mark, and thank you to Teresa and her folks up at Main Avenue Store. If you are looking to get new boots for harvest, now is your time. We have a guest on the line today, and he said it would be best to go to audio because his soil sampling, he didn't want to make his car sick as things were bouncing around in his soil sampling pickup. And this is one of our listeners, Chad Wheeler. Chad is a farm manager in the central part of the Red River Valley. And Chad, how do things look in the field? How rough is it on the soil sampling truck today?
Good afternoon, guys. We could use a drink up here. It's a little rougher than I was anticipating. The field's being for the rainfall that we've had this actual growing season.
I told you we needed rain, Bridget.
You do.
It's dry up there.
Can you hear Chad's voice bouncing as he's going across the field?
I can hear the dryness in his voice.
All right, Chad, you're soil sampling, but some folks are going to ask, what does that mean? What are you doing?
So after the crops are harvested, we take, I actually have a hydraulic cylinder mounted in our one pickup truck in the cab, and it's a 2-foot probe that takes a soil sample core, and it, for people understanding it, it's about a quarter in diameter and size and 2 feet long that we take, separate the top 6 inches and the 7 to 24 inches, blend that in buckets and put them into bags and send them off to our local laboratory, which is Ag Vice out in Northwood.
When you send the samples off, what do you want to know? What are you getting back from that?
So what we're looking for is to see what the crop removal was for the previous crop that we had, and I'm sampling wheat. So we're looking for our nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrient levels in the field. Also our organic matter and salt levels in the field to determine what we're looking at applying for fertilizer for the following crop to be planted next year.
And Chad, where exactly are you? Did you say that it is so dry?
Right now I'm east of I-29 and north of Reynolds.
Okay. We need some of that rain out west to move.
We do.
A little closer. And we'll get some as we head over the next 24 hours. So that's good news.
So
and in the soil sample cores that we're I'm pulling right now, the top about 10 inches, 8 to 10 inches is dry. Once you get down below that, there's still decent moisture in some of the fields that I'm sampling right now.
What was the crop on those fields that you're sampling right now, Chad?
The crop is wheat that we're combining right now that I'm basically chasing the combines around from field to field.
And Chad, knowing that information from doing the soil samples on that field, you had kind of briefly touched on that, but what's the significance of knowing that information of what the nutrient contents are of the soil or the... there's another word there, natural or organic matter. What's the significance of that, and how does that help you plan better for the following year's crop that's going in?
So soil sampling the wheat right now, we're looking to get accurate readings like we are on all the crops, but all of our wheat ground is into sugar beet production for the following year. And with sugar beets, you want to have... And it's kind of like the three little bears. You want to have just the right amount of nitrogen, so you basically run out at the end of the year and the beets aren't using any more nitrogen. They're converting all that that's inside the plant into sugars, so you have a higher sugar content.
I see. And how often are you pulling samples? I mean, over an area, how many cores are you going to pull to get a decent approximation for a field or a plot?
So all of our wheat ground that's going to sugar beets the following year is considered zone sampled. So within a quarter, 160-acre field, I'm sampling three different zones, a green zone, a yellow zone, and a red zone. And in each of those zones, I have anywhere from 12 to 14 sample cores that I take. And those sample cores within each zone are what are blended in each of the buckets to give a representation of that zone in the field.
I see. And then you said that this was wheat this year that you had recently harvested?
Yep. Just the combines pulled out of the field about 10 minutes ago and chasing them. So basically the theory behind that is if you sample on unworked ground, you get a more true, even sample of the soil profile. Otherwise, if you're sampling after the ground's worked, it's ground that you're getting into the sample that, depending on how deep it's worked, is a mixture of maybe the top 8 inches where you only want the top 6 inches in the top of your sample for that zone.
I see. And you don't got to say an exact number if you don't want to, but how was the wheat harvest this year? Was it bad, average, good, pretty good?
I'd say a little bit above average. We had almost ideal wheat growing conditions. Wheat is a cooler season crop, so the heat that kind of held off during the growing season for the first part is where the wheat thrived.
Right on.
And actually, I think, Chad, would I be right if I said that proteins were maybe just a tish higher than average for most places? And again, we're talking about spring wheat here, not winter wheat, correct?
Yeah, it depends on field and depends on variety, how much moisture and all that added into it. But I'd say the protein has been about average.
And again, spring wheat, right? Not winter wheat.
Yep.
Great.
Correct. Spring wheat.
Okay. Well, it is 1:30 in the afternoon. We are going to come back. We have Chad Wheeler with us. He's a farm manager up in the central to northern end of the Red River Valley. We're talking about wheat harvest, soil sampling, and next we want to talk about sugar beet harvest. Pre-pile started. I passed trucks today that were in the field. So what does that mean? What does the beet crop look like? And so much more. So stick with us when we talk to Chad Wheeler right after this. Thanks for joining us as we get to talk about sugar beets. Beet, beet, sugar beet, beet, beet.
Yeah, that is, beep, beep goes the bus.
Oh, the sugar beet song is actually from Sesame Street in the 70s. And once that starts, you cannot get it out of your head.
I don't remember that.
It's a whole video.
Is it?
Whole video.
I don't remember that.
And it was
one.
Actually filmed up in this region.
Wow.
Beet, beet, sugar beet, beet, beet. Right, Chad? You've heard this before, haven't you?
Yeah. I think everybody up here has.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We are talking with Chad Wheeler. He is a farm manager for a wheat, sugar beet, soybean, and corn operation. I think also dry beans, right?
Yeah, we actually haven't had corn for the last 3 years just due to what the crop plan has been. We're sugar beets, wheat. We have navy, pinto, and some black beans this year.
Okay, there's a lot of things on that farm we get to talk about. Mm-hmm. All right, we've been talking about sugar beets, and I've got Justin all excited that he might get a chance to come out and ride with you guys in some of the lifters right now during pre-pile, et cetera. So for those who are listening that aren't familiar with the term pre-pile and sugar beets, let's start there, Chad. Tell us about that.
So pre-pile generally starts here, I guess, for the last 10 years. It started around the middle of August, and it's kind of determined on the ag staff at the sugar co-ops, whether it's Mindac or American Crystal. They do sample pulls in the fields, and they have a conversion factor based off the weight of the samples to determine how the crop is performing and what the potential final yield could be. And that kind of determines when they want to start to pre-pile the beets, which is a lot of guys will take off the headlands of the fields and make a strikeout or a 6 to 12 row pass down the field so they have something for the sugar beet factories to start processing and make sugar to supply the end users of that product.
Okay. Maybe you said this. I'm making some notes here. What's the percentage of beets that go in during pre-pile? Is it like 10% of the overall crop? Does it vary by farmer customer?
Varies by co-op. And honestly, I can't remember. It's been a couple of years since I've actually done that, how much of the actual crop is taken in during the pre-pile schedule.
Okay, so besides you've got pre-pile going on, and pre-pile matters depending on where you land in the alphabet. Because if I'm not mistaken, like 1 year we start at A and work through pre-pile. The next year we flip it around and we start at Z and work through that. Would that be fair?
Yeah. So when I worked at American Crystal, there was a set schedule. And if you were the last to go for pre-pile, you got moved to the front. And the
for regular
group that
harvest.
Was in the front. Yep. Well, the group that was in the front for pre-pile, say this year, would get moved 1 week back. So you're starting, instead of this week for pre-pile, you'd start the following week. So it gave everybody the opportunity to pre-pile early because there's a potential bonus on your sugar content depending if you go in that first week and it's a really good year for pre-pile or not. So it gives each grower the opportunity to be able to do that.
When you're doing pre-pile, are you hauling into the factory or are you going out to some of the sub-sites, the piling stations, or do you want everything going into the factory?
It does. For pre-pile, you want everything will end up at the factory, but there are groups and outside receiving stations that will have their own individual set week for pre-pile other than the factory. So the factory yards, Moorhead, Hillsboro, East Grand Forks, Crookston, and Drayton, they will run every single week until we hit main harvest on or around October 1st. The outside receiving stations, whether you're talking Lynchburg or Grafton, or St. Thomas, they'll have their set week from now until October 1. That group will pre-pile. It kind of gives the pilers a test run to see if there's any issues that they can fix or resolve before the main harvest starts.
And it might be a little early with pre-piling just happening, but is there any indications of what things are looking like so far, or maybe an indication before pre-pile on how the crop was looking for this year's kind of total?
I have sampled a couple of our fields, and from what our samples have shown, it looks to be, from right now, depending on, and it all depends on rainfall amounts mm-hmm. from now until harvest, but right now it's looking like a nice crop. I wouldn't say as good as last year, but if we have rains and we have a warm September, that could all change.
I see. And when we're talking about what makes a good crop for sugar beets, are we talking about how much they weigh, their size, their sugar content? What defines a good crop for sugar beets?
You know, that's been a moving scale. I mean, back when I was young, you always wanted to have or beat 20 tons and 20 sugar. So your aim is for tons and sugar, but you want to have a better sugar content. And as the varieties have improved breeding, and now we have Cercospora-resistant variety, which is a whole nother talk, but the crop has performed even better. So if you're having a 30-ton crop or better and everybody shoots for an 18% sugar, that's where you kind of hit the sweet spot. The factories really, if they could have it their way, they want a slightly smaller beet crop and a higher sugar content
and
in perspective.
In terms of when you're bringing that into a plant, is there a better compensation to say if you have a higher sugar content than other people bringing beets in, or is it kind of uniform, you just bring your tonnage in and whatever the sugar content is, what the sugar content is?
So it averages out across the valley. Once harvest is done, there'll be a valley average for sugar.
Okay.
And your payment is determined off of your sugar content. So if you're above average, you're going to be a better payment than what people are sitting at average. And if you're below average, you're obviously going to have a lower payment. And there's other factors that play into that, but that's a generalized idea of how the payment would vary from grower to grower and across the valley.
Okay.
Couple of things, Chad, I think we need to clarify for people. When you talk about 30-ton beets, we need to remind folks that that's 30 tons per acre that we're taking off.
Not a single beet?
Not a single beet.
No. No, average beet is anywhere from just slightly under a pound to just over a pound.
Yeah, and they're sizable.
It's a lot of beets.
But now... What does sugar content mean? When you said 18% sugar, do you mean the percent of the beet that is sugar? Or when you extract it, what exactly does that mean when you're looking for sugar content?
Yeah, so when the beets go in to the factory into a piling site, there's a sampling process that happens where a select number of deliveries or truckloads are sampled, and those samples are taken to the American Crystal Quality Lab in East Grand Forks. And that sample bag usually is around 22 to 25 pounds of beets, so around 20 to 25 beets about. And they take those beets, wash them, grind them up, and they take a sample out of that mixture of beet, and they analyze it, and that gives you your sugar content. So, yes, a individual beet, you're wanting to be at or above 18% sugar. The rest is going to be excess nitrates, it's going to be pulp, and it's going to be water weight.
And Chet, you were saying that September does play a role if it's wet and warmer. Do you want a wet and warmer September, or do you want a little drier?
By the middle of September, you'd want to have a nice two-week window of dry weather. So as we get shorter days, you're having or wanting to have sunny days, and 65-degree weather is where the kind of sweet spot for sugar beets is for increasing their sugar content. They're not so much in an active growth stage. They're almost into their going into dormancy stage, where sugar beets are a biennial. They grow the first year, and then the second year they need to produce their seed stock. So that's when they're trying to push all their energy and reserves into the rut to make it to the next year.
See, so in terms of a year as a whole, what's a good weather year for sugar beets to increase the sugar content and the tonnage of the beet as well? What kind of weather do they really thrive in as a year, or for a year as a whole?
Boy, I wish I could give you a good answer, because there have been years where I've thought the crop is going to be a failure on how the year started out, planting late, and it's actually been not too bad of a year. And then there's years where you plant early, you have a cool year, a wet spring, disease can set in. So there's no one good year, no one good weather outlook that's going to give you the best answer. I'd say they having a decent September, if it's or decent end to August, start of September, warm, active growing, moisture, and then drying off and cooling down as September progresses is going to get you your best sugar. Not always, but that's kind of what you're hoping for.
Okay.
And we're in it for the good sugar. There's no doubt about that. So Chad, as you've done pre-pile, what needed to be done at the farm equipment-wise to get you all ready to go to the field for this here in August?
A lot of it starts after you get done with harvest.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of the prep work, if equipment needs service done to it, that's generally when you pull it in, is in the wintertime. So at this time of the year, with wheat harvest going and everything kind of firing off, you don't really want to have to worry about any repairs or anything. It's just hooking up to the harvester, hooking up to the topper, and if you have B carts, getting those hooked up. The trucks, it's basically pulling bolts out of end gates and putting plastic or poly in the boxes so the beets and mud don't stick to them, which is, that's another battle, is mud.
Right. And Chad, when it comes to harvesting sugar beets, how is it done? What type of equipment do you need to, as Bridget says, lift beets and not dig them out?
Right.
What kind of equipment, what's that look like?
So the topper or rotobeater, whichever part of the valley you end on, guys have different names for them. For whatever reason, it is what it is. It's basically a big flail mower. So there's a set of steel flails in the front and then two sets of rubber flails in the back. And it goes along and pretty much removes the leaf material from the beets. After that, the sugar beet harvester comes along, and basically it's two lifter wheels or steel wheels that are angled that kind of lift the beets out of the ground and put them onto a steel chain or bed that brings them all the way, cleans them throughout the harvester, and deposits them basically into the truck as it's following alongside it, or the cart that's following alongside it.
So it sounds like you need a couple pieces of equipment here then, or multiple pieces of equipment when pulling it out versus just like a harvester and a,
like a
and
combine,
a header, a yeah, combine
you,
and a header.
You need a lot more bodies to do all of this too. He's talking about the operations. So just wait till we get you in the field, Justin.
It's going to be fun to see what it's like and to show you guys. Well, Bridget, you probably have an idea.
Yeah.
Dean, I don't think you do.
No.
No.
Yeah, we didn't harvest. We didn't pull beets as a kid. So.
See, I've never dabbled in beets in my simulator games. It's wheat, corn, and sunflowers.
It'll be impressive because when you see fields at night, you know, all lit up, it's because there are tractors with, like, he's like, you know, like Chad mentioned, the topper. You've got the harvesters, you got the trucks, and you got somebody out there with fuel for service. Hopefully they brought you supper. There's a lot of action in the field.
Sure seems like it.
Yes.
Chad, have you seen or heard about this new Ropa self-propelled harvester, like an all-in-one harvester for sugar beets where it mows, pulls them out, and then puts them in a cart behind it?
Yeah, I have. I haven't had the opportunity to ride in one or operate one or see it actually in a field operate. It's a great concept. No, in the sugar beet growing area in Michigan, up by the thumb there is a large number of them used in that region. Also over in Europe, that's kind of where they got their start. Ropa and Agrifax, they're all European companies that have the beet harvest equipment. And
cool.
It'd be fun to see one. My personal experience has just always been with the conventional way of sugar beet harvest with the topper and the harvester in the field with the tractors on both of them.
I'd love to test drive one just to see. That's a lot of moving.
Oh, I'm
action.
Modding one into the simulator game. I'll mod one and I'm going to try it out. I'll do sugar beets for the first time ever.
Can't wait.
Farming simulator. I'll let you know how it goes.
Oh, excellent. All right, Chad Wheeler, thank you. I hear the hydraulic cylinder in the back. I hear you're doing soil sampling. Thanks for taking the time today to talk about what's going on at Harvest up there. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Much appreciated. And we will be back to touch on the weather, a few headlines when we return.
And welcome back to the program, 1:53 on this Wednesday afternoon. We got about 6-5 minutes left of the show here. We'll get a quick rundown on that forecast coming up. If you want to sneak in quickly, 701-293-9000, Red Wings Shoe Line is open for you to call with any questions or comments. But sit on another one of these ag topics here, and this one will be on Titan Machinery. They got a diesel camp for high school students. Bridget, what's Titan Machinery doing with the high schools?
I really have to say that I can't stress enough how awesome it is when you have equipment manufacturers or those who are in the trades, whether it's carpentry, plumbing, heating, the HVAC, et cetera, that are trying to make sure that they bring students in and get them interested at a young age. Titan is doing the same thing. They've hosted 8 different diesel camps all around the region, teaming up with different tech schools to do that. And one of them was held in July with North Dakota State College of Science. Boy, that's how old I am. I remember when it was a state science school. And at Titan, what they are trying to do is get those students exposed early on to powertrains, transmissions, engines, air conditioning, electrical, and hydraulics. And when you think about what has changed over the years as far as mechanics are concerned, you have to be as computer savvy as you do swinging a wrench. So this gets students from the freshman to senior excited about the opportunity to work for Titan Machinery. I think there's a lot of equipment folks that are looking for technicians right now, and they would be happy to have you. I know that plenty of farmers would love to hire you as well if you have that diesel technical experience too. But I think it's a great way to get kids involved and interested and just show them what the real world is going to look like when it's time to work for that employer.
That's very cool and very interesting as well. And last topic for the day, this is going to be about bird flu again and the concerns leading to vaccines.
And it's not the vaccines for the animals.
Really? So what is this?
This is a vaccine for the human workers.
So the people don't get the bird flu.
Correct. Now, there's currently a very low incident rate of that, but there is actually Moderna was awarded $176 million for vaccine development to try to bring that to fruition.
And they're about to duke it out with Pfizer. And then Johnson & Johnson will step in, and then we'll get AstraZeneca.
They have not been mentioned.
Oh, really?
So far,
not,
just
not yet.
Not yet.
They haven't been mentioned yet. Wait till October.
There actually was some late-stage development prior to the pandemic working on bird flu, because this is not the first time bird flu has expressed itself around the world.
Well, I don't believe this is the first time that people have gotten bird flu either,
is it not? Yeah, people with close exposure have gotten it before. In the instance that's happened in the U.S., there have been just like 2 or 3 of folks who were deflocking commercial poultry flocks. Mm-hmm. So, off with their heads, you might say, was what they were doing.
Begone.
And then the dairy industry, you're close and personal with some cattle. Mm-hmm. And there have been at least 5 in Colorado. I can't remember if it's 5 or 8 now that have also been infected with bird flu. So there's work to be done on a vaccine for humans, but it's not a widespread health concern at this point either.
Huh. Very, very interesting.
So we'll see where that goes. It is an mRNA vaccine, so that brings all sorts of people wanting to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yes.
We have had, it was a year ago in May, we had Dr. Kevin Folta. He is a doctor of microbiology and immunology from University of Florida join us, and he talked about the fact that it's not that scary. Don't be afraid of the mRNAs. And if we have to have Dr. Folta back on again to have this discussion, he would be more than happy to help explain why. These are good scientific breakthroughs that we can use.
Indeed.
Good guy.
I wonder if they'll be able to do it better than the old-fashioned flu shot.
Well,
the way I understand that works is it's just a guessing game each year for which variant is going to be the dominant one.
I don't think we're going to be any different when it comes to bird flu. You cannot predict exactly what the strain's going to be. And it's a virus. It can change itself.
Right. And I'm sure this would be something more that people who deal with birds would consider getting versus, like, everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
Dean, you going to get the bird flu shot?
No.
All right.
No.
All right. You sure? You want to think again on that?
I'll get that as soon as I get the COVID.
Orange and red? Red and orange?
That's green.
Red and orange is green. That's green.
I don't
get. If you missed yesterday's show, that was a great one. Right.
I'm not going to get excited about a bird flu vaccine at this point.
Can we give Cooper the bird flu vaccine?
It was designed for humans.
He's human enough. He's sitting on a table.
But that's the question I would have is, are you going to vaccinate livestock instead of the human component of it?
Well,
maybe.
Maybe. I mean, I don't think it's practical in birds, but in cattle, but I don't think cattle really have an issue with bird flu outside of just being sick for a little bit.
They mostly just pass through it. So all good.
That's a goat, not a cow.
Yeah.
You know what? We're trying here.
We got to go.
We got places to go. We got places to be, things to do. There's something else in there, too. I don't remember what it is. Yeah, he's coming up next. We'll see what Jay's got going on. Have a great day, everyone.